Welcome to Anything But a One, Adventures in Historical Miniature Wargaming. Do you take playing with your toy soldiers seriously?
They're historical miniatures, Chantel.
Well, these nerds sure do. Here are your hosts, Tom Castaños, Richard Martinez, and Ray Winstead.
Welcome back to Anything But a One, Adventures in Historical Miniature Wargaming. Thank you, Chantel, for the introduction. Remember to like and share the podcast with all of your friends. If you have any, I'm kidding. I'm sure you have friends. That helps us to grow the podcast. The more people that hear the podcast, the more great topic ideas we get. If you want to support us on the Buzzsprout.com webpage, you can click the little heart button and buy us a beer. Or you can go to Patreon, patreon.com/ABA and the number one. All of that helps to support the technical side of this stuff. We really appreciate all your help. So today's topic, I had the opportunity to be over on the Lead Pursuit podcast a couple of weeks ago, and we opened up the can of worms about house rules. There are three people at this table, and they have three decidedly different ideas about what house rules mean. And I'll tell you off the bat, Ray's the anarchist. Richard is the dictatorial, you know, no. And I'm going to say I'm the voice of reason. I'm kidding. I'm right in the middle. I see times and I, you know, either way. So the idea behind this is, you know, do house rules ruin a game? Do they make a game better? Are there exceptions? When do you do it? When do you not do it? Richard, when do you do it?
Greg, when do you do it? I think the best time to institute a house rule is when everyone is in agreement that one is needed.
Okay, so unilateral agreement is one of the keys.
Yes, it's like being part of the UN. Everyone's got a veto choice on it, and they can just, you know, plunge it down. As you said, normally I am a person that does not like using house rules. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'll stand here and also admit that there are times I've agreed to use them as well, too. Mm-hmm. Even in some of our recent games, we've used it for example, I said, Ray looking at me with a weird face there. So I'll give him the example recently that we used it in. So we were playing War of the Roses, and we were using the new Hail Caesar 2 rules. Mm-hmm. And in there, it talked about, you know, medieval heavy infantry always got a -1 from the front from missile fire. And we played like a few games, and then we all talked about it, and we said a way to distinguish the men-at-arms units and a way to distinguish the foot knight units, because technically they both would have gotten that modifier, was to give it to the knights and not give it to the men-at-arms. Right. And so that was a very simplistic, it was a little loose modifier. It made it a little easier to hit, and I think we're all okay in doing that.
That was a recent example.
Yeah, so I'm not like every rule that comes across my feed, I auto-veto. I do think, though, that there's sometimes our group gets into conversations and where there are times that I don't agree on the ideas that we're using it for, and then that's where the problems come in, right? It's like two people think it should be done, and one's like, no, it doesn't need to be done, and that's where the distinctions come. I think you can have too many house rules, and that can be a problem. Every time you have a game, a house rule's got to be put into effect, and there are degrees of it. And we've had this conversation before, all three of us. When the house rule is about a modifier, that's one thing. When the house rule is to a base mechanic of how a rule system works, that's where I get really that's where my veto power comes in. I get really extreme in wanting to change game mechanics with it.
Ray?
I at face value, I can accept everything you said.
I agree. Episode over.
Yeah. It didn't work like that.
But.
Oh, okay. There's the but.
Yes. Of course there's a but. It what if one person is just flat not enjoying a game because a game mechanic is to them just completely disruptive to the game?
I think those
mm-hmm. are the situations that
Is this rhetorical, or do I actually get to answer?
Well, I'm just clarifying here.
Yeah.
Because those are the occasions that I think house rules become important.
And I would, so I can see that point of view where if one person isn't enjoying the game, the idea comes up about it. But then I counter that scenario with, what if in the instance of using the house rule to change, and again, I think you have to distinguish between what's being changed. Is it a little modifier that, you know, people can just say, okay, well, I can agree that modifier doesn't need to be there. Or is it a base mechanic? What if in the process, if you change the base mechanic, you've made, you're going to flip the script. You make one person happy, you make the other person unhappy that doesn't like what that change has resulted in as well. You still have an unhappy person on each side of the argument in that case.
Okay. So what have you lost by changing the house rule, deciding it didn't work in this one game that we played?
Yeah.
And then you go back to the drawing board and say, okay, well, that didn't work.
So for me as a player, I don't like the ever tinkering to find the perfect formula. It's not like we're making, you know, cookies in the kitchen and we're trying to find the perfect recipe for it. For me, the constant tinkering also takes away from the enjoyment and the value of the game. Because I want to play the game and just be able to say, we're playing the game, we're having fun, winner or loser. I do not enjoy being in the forever test mode environment for a game to try and find the perfect set of combinations that make it correct, especially if I'm already, if one of the people, in this case, if we're talking about my side of it, is already satisfied on how that game is playing out.
Okay. The difficulty here, and really this is going back to a specific set of rules where this situation came up. But the problem is, I don't see it as forever tinkering. The intent is to change one aspect of the game. If that doesn't work, then sure, at that point, there can be a discussion and a decision of whether to try another house rule or just go back to the game. Or what happened in our specific case, it is just so awkward that I didn't want to play the game.
And I think you bring that up. It's, again, what are the individual preferences for that? Because, again, the experience for one was unsatisfactory. In the process of changing things, it becomes unsatisfactory for others, for another person in
exactly.
that group. And so you still have two people
case,
that are not.
In that case.
You still have someone that's not unhappy. That's not happy.
Okay, but just what I'm saying is, you're not engraving this house rule into stone. It's not, at no point, in my opinion, is a rule book ever a just unmutable thing. It's not like rules have descended from the supreme being of the universe and said, ye shalt do it this way. If it doesn't, if it's not working, change it. If that change doesn't work, change it again or agree to go back.
Well, it's not called a suggestion book.
Well, and
it's called a rule book.
And I also agree that that's the case. If
there spoken was, like a person who is truly in the middle there, Tom.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, you're speaking from the perspective, and I agree, and if this would be the case, if all interested parties are unhappy with what the situation is on the game table, if you have a situation where people are happy with the product and the outcome, that's where the problem is going to happen, because some are happy with how it's working out. They don't want to consider the change because they're happy with the product, and you have others who are not. In this case, you were not happy with a certain mechanic, but there are two of us who were happy with that mechanic and didn't see a need to want to finagle, tinker, work with it. That's where the problems happen. Now, if all three of us are in agreement, then yeah, it's rainbows and sunshine, right? There's no problem with instituting a house rule in that
case. I guess it's coming down to, why is there such an unwillingness to try something different?
For me, again, it goes back to this ever endless search that it can turn into to find this perfect set when people are already happy with how that works.
So I'm going to interject here because it's 12 minutes in and I haven't said anything. I think part of the problem is for me. We need to clarify that, you know, right off the bat. My view on this is when we choose to change things. We've had discussions about changing things after a reading of the rules. We've had a discussion of changing things after one or two games of playing something and saying, oh, that didn't work. I don't think that's even vaguely a fair analysis of a game. If you figured that, and again, and I agree with you in respect that, and this is something we talked about on Lead Pursuit, you know, great, a game gets play tested, and if it's a good game, it got play tested a lot. But it's still not play tested as many times as when it's released into the wild and 1,000 copies are sold and 1,000 play groups play it multiple times. I mean, so yeah, it's there's no way that play testing will ever work out every conceivable opportunity. Playing the game does that. But we're talking about a repetition of dozens of games by different people to get to that point. Not, I played it once and it sucked. Let's fix it. Which leads to the problem of, why did it suck? Was it poor play? Was it the selection of the nationality or faction that you played? You know, I think so many other things have to be taken into account before you immediately go to the it's broken, let's fix it thing.
And especially the idea, too, that especially when we're starting a lot of these games, they're just pick-up ad hoc games. They're not even, for some of these games, built. The lists aren't built out the way they're supposed to be. We're just playing with what we had available and wanting to make changes based on
We've talked about for years playing a game at the scale that they were intended to be played at. And until you do that, I don't know that you have a fair opinion of how that works.
Correct.
And I'm so, not opposed to changing it when it's been played through and through at its intended level.
Right. And then intended list and the intended, right. All the balance features that go into it.
And to me, house rules is the step you make when you say, damn, I really, really, really like these rules except for that thing. And like you said, unilateral agreement, but after considerable play test, maybe rotating who plays what so everybody gets that different perspective of what it does and how it affects that thing. Then, because if you're not at that stage of I really, really like these rules, but, and everybody comes up with a problem, then in my opinion, it's time to look for another rule, not
the rule set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or write your own damn rules.
Or that. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So, how many games is the magic number of games before somebody is allowed to say, damn, I really like this game, but this part of it absolutely sucks.
I'd say a minimum of 4 or 5 playing different sides of the game.
I think that's an important consideration you bring up, too, is that sometimes I know we get tunnel vision with the side that we, a side that may be experiencing the frustration with their particular force, right?
Yeah.
I'll give a recent example with, you know, the recent games we played with Blood and Steel with the Zulus and the English, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've only played one side, and mm-hmm. I know there are particular problems with it, and not that I've suggested any rule changes to that, but before I should see it from the other perspective as well and see how it plays on that side as well to see if my ideas hold forth for both sides.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's an important aspect of it too.
I think that's where you really achieve that unilateral decision is when you've seen all the sides of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you're smirking, Ray. Hit us.
Yes, because in the specific situation that inspired this, we had played multiple games. There was one rule, one procedure that just, to me, broke the game. I was happy with everything else, but at no point would anybody ever even entertain making a change to it.
All right, because I'm going to counter what you said. We played at most 4 games. Well,
oh, come on. We played at least 10 or 15 games of it.
Of what?
Wasn't
yes.
me.
Of yes. What?
Yes.
Dude, we haven't played 10 or 15 games in 3 years total, let alone...
This was years ago.
So let's just quit pussyfooting around. You're talking Team Yankee, right?
Yep.
I have not played more than 7 games of Team Yankee total, and that's including my solo games.
Yeah, I've played all on one hand.
We played more than that.
No, we haven't.
I know I haven't.
No, your PTSD memory of it than that, but it's no.
I've got a stack of army lists that I've played that is deeper than that number mm-hmm. of games.
Mm-hmm. Not a chance. Not a chance. And by the way, you always played the same nationality.
No, actually I played the Allies. I played like, yes.
Played the NATO.
Never played Warsaw Pact.
Pigeonholed. Well, that's not true. I did play a game with Warsaw Pact once.
Who are you playing
who
with?
Who are you playing with?
Are you getting up in the middle of the night and cheating on us, bro? Because we did not. I can literally think of 1, 2, 3, maybe 5 games tops that we all played together of Team Yankee.
Yes.
And all of those were, and back to my criteria, dramatically under the scale it was intended to be played at.
Yes.
We did not have the support elements.
What we
which
had,
was,
it was just a bunch of tanks.
Of the problem.
And we've said that
we
was
agreed,
one of the conditions. Play
because
it,
we
in
agreed
full form.
That none of us wanted a mass number of teams on the table. We wanted to keep it.
Yeah, because we were
playable.
We didn't have the level. Stuff to begin with. Right. That was the agreement because we didn't have collective, all sides considered, we did not have the right combination of things to fill out an appropriate formation. Period. Right? Even the Warsaw Pact, we're split between the types of tanks we had. We brought to the game what we had. And so it was not, again, going back to playing the game the way it was intended to be. Those were not representative examples of how that game should have been played. We were learning mechanics. That's all it was. And that's why we said it's okay that we fudge list and whatever, bring what you have to the same point level. That's one thing we did agree on. We said whatever you do bring, add it up, and it should be comparable point levels. It wasn't like, you know, someone bring 200 points and one person brings 100 points.
No.
And you played.
No. And to raise credit, at that point level, for NATO, it was difficult. because it would appear, and this is having not played it, but, you know, me doing my little solo games with my US, that it gets way better when you have the other things. Mm-hmm. You know, it's comparatively, and we're talking about Canadians with Leopard 1s versus either T-72s or T-64s, was a very difficult proposition by the cost and by the vehicle. But that was never more than 50 points because we didn't have it. Like you said, now I can field 100 points of Soviet. So you're ready to go. Well, let's try it. You have all the support to make it a 100-point Canadian or NATO list?
Well, at this point, the issue... Let's be fair here.
All right.
At this point, the issue has largely resolved itself.
Yeah, you stopped because playing. Yeah, you stopped playing.
I stopped playing because I wasn't having a good time.
Yeah, that's fair.
Fair enough.
Basically,
that's what the choices are.
Came down
that.
To that. It had become such a frustrating thing because I couldn't play anything that I wanted to play. And so it kind of became pointless. I was pigeonholed into only one or two lists, and neither one of them held any interest for me.
I'm shaking my, I'm like, gesturing my hand, you can't see it. I was going to say, to be fair, you didn't, I think when you say the word pigeonholed, it was a self-imposed pigeonhole. You could have tried the other side, which you never did. You never, I mean, we offered, right? There was never taken up on that offer. Try this side, see how it looks from this side, the Warsaw Pact perspective.
Let
someone else. Yeah,
that's not true.
I've never seen you on my side rolling dice. I've only ever played Warsaw Pact, and you've never been on my side.
No, I haven't. But there is a reason I own a pile of Warsaw Pact stuff.
But own and played are two different things. So
well,
you're not seeing the. You're not.
It all kind of fizzled down before any of it managed to get to the table.
I'm gonna step off mic for just a
He's
second.
You gonna cuss right now?
Exactly.
Because it didn't happen. I didn't realize you were a game psychic because you're projecting.
Yes, I never played any of my Soviet stuff because by that point, which was like a year and a half,
game 70 according to you of the five that we played.
I didn't say that.
I know I'm playing.
But it you know, it really comes down to at what point, what is the magic number to decide this ain't working for me, I ain't having fun.
Five or six games playing all the sides. We just said that.
And I'll throw in the other caveat that we just mentioned too is that
at the appropriate
there has to be an agreement that amongst all the players that it's not working and we should have a change. And I think that's the basic impasse we came to in this game as much, and which is one reason why we stopped playing. Ray was not having fun with it, mm-hmm. with how it was constructed, with how he was playing his NATO forces and the things that he was having to face. And we were happy with how it was working out. We weren't considering changes to any of the mechanics.
Which I want to stress is perfectly valid. If you don't like the game, you don't like the that's your right as a mm-hmm. democratic society, free person in the world. The game sucks to you. The game sucks to you. You brought that Vietnam board game and good God, I'll never play that again. But I mean, you know, look, it's not that there's people that would just roll around in that like pigs in mud, but I didn't like it. Right. So that's not one that I would play again.
I enjoyed that game.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly the point, right? But I will die on the hill that you didn't give it a fair try because you didn't try other sides. We never got to the appropriate level of that game where the support units and things were in it. And it could still suck. I'm fully open to the idea that it could still suck, but I don't think we got anywhere near the level to be able to make that decision to start tinkering with the basics of the system. Yeah, if you were talking about a modifier, if you were saying, oh, I think they should be a plus one instead of a plus two or whatever, that kind of stuff would be different on the table all the time.
Right.
But, you know, to make a fundamental change to point values or the way a rule works, we didn't play it nearly enough through enough gyrations of, I mean, you've literally played one nationality or one version of it at its lowest level and wrote it off, which again, that is your right to do. But to me, that does not broach the level of rewriting the rules. It might. It might if we got past it to, and by the way, we don't want this to be a Team Yankee episode, but this is really kind where it really fell apart for us.
Yes, because it's the only game where I have really adamantly pushed to get something changed. And I felt I had some really valid reasons for doing it. It wasn't working in any of the games that I played.
With a third of a Canadian force.
Except I never played Canadians.
Well, okay, a third of a NATO force. Pardon.
NATO.
And you said something, you know, you talk about the pigeonholed. Rich said self pigeonholed, and I brought up this before. If you go out to play Napoleonic, and what really fires your imagination is a Neapolitan corps supported by Westphalians, you're going to get your ass kicked. You know, unless it's, you know, Austrian Landwehr that's attacking you.
I had a better than 500 batting average.
You did.
You did.
It was about 50.
When I suggested the changes.
Yes,
the
exactly.
The changes would have benefited the Soviets.
I disagree.
In Europe.
Not me.
I disagree.
Not us. We disagreed on that.
Yep.
We were fine with the way it was playing.
Yep.
Rich, what did I actually say I wanted to change?
There are a couple of things you wanted to change, so it depends on what variation you want to go on.
I only had one. I've only
there were times
one
you explored.
So here's
part of that problem. I mean, it may be that you had one, but like Tom says, a lot of times our discussions, which we all invite them, go into the theoretical and what could be, coulda, woulda, shoulda. And looking into crystal balls and into the future, this it would happen this way. Because I remember you and I in cars going on various trips to different places talked about changing point values, talked about changing rate of fire values, talked about changing command distances and how the command system works. There's three off the top of my head I could think of, and I'm sure there were more that were changes that you and I had discussed. Different ways to incorporate into the system. And I didn't like any of them. I mean, I'll be upfront. And I think you got that impression talking. It's like, I don't agree. I don't agree point values need to be changed. I don't agree rate of fire needs to be changed. I don't agree that the command system or command range needs to be changed. So those are three. Okay. I don't know about the ones you talked about with Tom. Were there any other ones, Tom?
Those are the big ones I remember. Basically the command range and the rates of fire.
Because that was it.
That's two.
The command rate, they were fire. Related. No. The
That's
idea
funny.
Was completely tied together. It was changing one aspect of the rules. I wanted to do away with NATO having a rate of fire of two because that would, in effect, allow me more teams on the table rather than trying to fight 20 freaking Soviets.
We didn't have 20 Soviets.
Nope.
With between the two of you.
Nope.
Nope.
Had 10 between us.
That's what I'm saying. The theoretical. You're talking about what could have been faced, not what you actually did face.
I had one unit.
We didn't have 20 tanks. I know that. I'm not disputing your one unit.
However,
we didn't have 20
tanks.
However,
you divided it up, it was 4 units to 1.
Which got you a 50-50 win ratio. Yeah.
And you won half the games.
Well, 50, yeah, we won half the game. 50-50 win ratio with that configuration.
Actually, I won more than 50-50. If you go back to all of our games.
You're right, the first
games.
11.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, we didn't play those either, but no, you did. You had a good record.
It was
a
comparable win ratio. It
absolutely
was about an even. I don't know the exact numbers. 3 wins to 5 wins, but it was
either.
Pretty.
But I remember
pretty balanced on the win loss.
I remember
sides.
Walking away from the table having won, because that was always the argument. Why do you want to change it if you're winning?
If you have an equal chance of winning, right?
Yeah, equal chance. Right. If you were winning every game.
It wasn't a balance issue.
And see, to me, that's how I normally approach a lot of the systems, is because of a balance issue. I think that's probably core and where I consider making changes to things, is to bring balance to it. If I do want to make a change, if it's not a balance issue, I don't really have a big incentive to want to make a change.
But see, it's a historical game, so I don't expect it to be balanced.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. I'll argue Team Yankee's not a historical game, but I agree with you on that respect. The scenario that I'm building for the Eastern Front is not balanced, because it shouldn't be. You know, basically, it's got a historical background.
But you're talking about a situation where it's scenario-based. I'm talking about from a game perspective. If I play a game and one side always loses, it's not a very fun game, and we're not going to be playing it very long.
Yeah.
There should be an equal chance of victory on both sides. Don't care if it's historical or not. That's why you play the game. If you always lose, you don't play the game. That's why it is a game. It's a game. Both sides should be able to win.
Right. Whether it's
a game, it's more of a game than a historical piece. It's a historical game, but there still needs to be an equal access to both sides to have victory.
Or there should be some
measure of it. I mean, maybe it's based on turn, maybe it's based on objectives, but there should be the opportunity for both sides to win. And it should be, you know, there should be some balance. And I'm not saying every game should be a 50-50 balance.
No.
Granted, they can be slanted one way or the other, depending on the scenario. But overall, the game should be equally accessible.
Each side should have a reasonable chance of winning.
Right.
However you define winning, But that doesn't imply balance.
Right, correct.
Per se.
Right.
It depends how you define balance. To me, it does. To me, that's how I look at balance. That's how I define that. You want to define it a different way with different words, you can, but that may not be the definition I ascribe to it. And so to pull
but
it away.
Balance, here's the thing, though.
Yes.
Balance was never the issue. It was the fact that there is such a disparity between the values of this stuff that when you actually start applying the rules for building a list and you restrict the points down past a certain point, it doesn't work. The options you have become so restrictive that the vast majority of the stuff in like 4 books that I had for the game simply weren't playable. Out of like 4 books, there were like 2 or 3 lists that were playable, but not terribly interesting, were not at all flexible. So
So I understand.
At that point, where's the fun in that?
I understand the statement that you are making. I'll go back to the earlier comment that I made that that's not how I approach when we make house rules to a game system. Because like you just said, it's based on your force composition and how you and flexibility in lists. That's not what triggers it for me. I have a different perspective. I have a different origin of why we bring in those kinds of house rules. And for me, it is more, leans more, not solely, but more on a balance side of it. That's what triggers it for me. So we approach this from two different perspectives.
But there is the crux of the situation. I was never screaming that the game wasn't balanced. I was never trying to change the game so that I had a better chance of winning. I was quite satisfied with the air quotes balance of the game. I could come up with ways to win the game. The problem is it was forcing me into playing things that I had absolutely no interest in whatsoever. I approached this game, I approached it from multiple different directions and just kept running into roadblock after roadblock after roadblock. So at some point, something was going to have to give. It was either I was just going to have to settle down and say, if I'm going to play this game, I got this. And that's just it. And that's all I'm ever going to do.
But that's what I'm saying. That's not a criteria for me on why I want to institute a house rule. That's where that's the break in the logic that we're using here.
And so I
there's a different
that.
Perspective.
But
on that.
Obviously, if you're not suggesting the house rule, it's because you are happy with what you got.
Yes.
It's the person who's unhappy who is always going to be suggesting the house rule.
Until the house rule. Again, if it's about flavor and it's a modifier, that's one thing. But when you start messing with mechanics, then that's where the script flips and the other sides may not be satisfied with the outcome of that.
But we never tried it.
No, but we talked it ad nauseum. And so you're right. We did not try it because there was not seen as a need on my end to try that. You're right. So, and so we can even take this. I'm not sure how much time we have left to go.
Give us another 5 minutes.
We can take this out of the realm of Team Yankee. Talk about house ruling. Another good example of where this occurred. And again, I think another ad nauseum conversations came with Pike and Shot and our experience with the English Civil Wars, right? Where I know from Ray's side of it, he was never really happy with how the delineation between the Dutch and the Swedish system was playing out on the game board. I didn't have a problem with it, right? I did not want to mess with rules about figure ratio and frontages and all these other things. And I think you fell in that same camp because that was another example of, again, house rules that we never implemented, but lots of conversations around how we were going to change it to make a better reflection of that.
And I would say that it fixed itself when you look at Epic.
Except
because
there's a caveat there.
Allow me to finish. When you finally played that game at the level that the rules were kind of written for, and that was many multiples of battalions, then you could arrange them on the table to fit more of your model of those systems than at the very minuscule level that we played it in 28 millimeter.
So my count, and I could accept that. I mean, that's an idea that sounds okay on the surface, but here's my counter to that. When those conversations came to a head and we were not seeing eye to eye on, you know, this distinction for the Dutch and Swedish system, How many times did we play it again at 28? None.
None.
How many times have we played it at Epic?
None.
None.
None. Yeah.
So the end result is we don't wind up playing the game. Right. When we have complete armies to play this game at the 28 millimeter level. I enjoyed those games. Mm-hmm. Granted, I understand that, you know, and Ray can chime at any time here, that scale was not to his liking. That scale was perfectly fine for me. I was having mm-hmm. absolute fun mm-hmm. playing those games. And so here's an example in my mind, another game system, because of the you know, we never got into a consensus on how we were going to house rule it, but it died on the vine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's waiting to be rejuvenated through this Epic system mm-hmm. that is not anywhere near close to being done.
Mm, it's closer than you think.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
That's going to be you painting everything.
Yeah,
you
that's
painted
right.
for everything exactly. on the other one, too.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but I actually spent time building stuff yeah. for Pike and Shot. I started painting it.
Yeah.
And we were using my miniatures in those
Yes,
days.
We were.
You know, I got Bubkis to show for the Epic.
Yeah.
Well, here is my side of the Epic thing. First of all, I never said, nor did I ever decide I didn't like playing Pike and Shot, even at 28. It didn't die on the vine because of a dispute. I said, I don't like the scale that it's at, but I continued to play it. It died because we just moved on to other stuff. Second thing is,
I remember you making a lot of the comments that you weren't happy with it. Same kind of the same thing about
wasn't
teammates.
Happy
you
with
weren't
the
happy
scale.
With the
it,
well, yeah,
it, the scale
the games.
Didn't.
You weren't happy with the games
fit.
Because
my
of
comment
the
was always, this isn't really English Civil War. It just wasn't it
to you,
right? I thought it was a great. I mean, we saw great examples of it too in other game systems, like at Millennium Gone. Where they would play.
We were using tactics that didn't apply to that era. Our tactics evolved well past the English Civil War. And that's what we were doing. So it became very late 17th century. It wasn't mid 17th century. However, there was never an objection to playing it. I just said I would like to do something that brought those, that enforced those tactics. So we discussed different ways of trying to enforce that, but at no point did I ever suggest changing the game.
And the written rules existed.
Holy. Oh, yeah, I'm confused. Wait, never. I wish I had a computer screen. I can pull up a text thread that's like hundreds of messages long on how you wanted to change the game. All your ideas on
all,
how to change the game.
It was all scale stuff.
It was all about ratios and frontages and modifiers. It was a bunch of things. I mean, I guess scale, if you're talking about trying to make the battle bigger, yes.
Let's
but it was,
put it this way.
It was a lot of ideas.
When Epic came out, it did everything I suggested we do.
Which I want to go back to saying.
Epic is essentially what I wanted to do.
Which now I'm going to interject here. And what you wanted to do, or I would, not what you wanted to do, but the result you wanted to achieve. Because it always existed in the form of the
To Kill a King supplement.
Booklet, where units were tied together, so the ratios were set. They weren't running off on their own, one of your considerations that was late 17th century.
Yes,
but stop. You have both talked far enough in this episode. Because at the time, in 28 millimeter, if we'd have done that, we'd have been issuing one order per side, or two, I mean, that's being facetious, like 2 to 3 orders per side if we would have connected everything into one unit. So that we had the mechanic of a warlord-style game where you have to issue the order and see if the commander takes it. we chose to separate those units out. So we physically would have a number of so there was never a problem that wasn't once again playing it at the scale that it was intended to be played at. If we had had enough stuff on the board, then we could have put those units together. I mean, a pike and shot game in 28 millimeter played to epic proportions would be a lot of miniatures or a huge freaking table. So what we're counting on, because it hasn't happened yet, is that in the smaller scale, we will have more units that will be banded together that won't run off on their own, and it'll be more representative of an early 17th century battle than a later one. So the rule was always there. Yes. We didn't use it for a number of reasons.
I never tried to house rule anything.
Yeah, you did.
No.
Yeah, you did.
What?
You tried.
The percent, the ratio.
We talked about the ratios of muskets. We talked about adding a modifier because you were always going to have the musket line not in front of the pike line.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
No.
I got the text.
It was in between that 19th and 20th.
My solution.
Wait. My solution. In the end. My solution. In the end. Was when I finally acknowledged it just doesn't work in 28 millimeter because you can't put enough stuff on the table.
So, you came up with that too.
So I bought 6 millimeter stuff and proceeded to try to come up with a way of using the rules as they were presented with the 6 millimeter stuff to get more things on the table. That was not house ruling anything. I acknowledge 28 millimeter. There is nothing to really change to make it work.
I guess you have to make a distinction between what your final consensus was and what you had all the way leading up to it, in my mind, maybe it wasn't months, but weeks at least, of conversations that dealt with how to change and modify the rules. Now, whether in the end you abandon all those attempts to do that and came up with the idea, it just can't be done at 28. Yes, that's what you came up at the end. There were many discussions, ad nauseum text discussions. I hate texting because it takes me forever to type those little things into my phone. Of us going back and forth about what needed to change with how the current configuration of units and how they're put together to play that game. That, to me, was the attempts at house
rule. I don't remember changing anything.
Okay. I'll remind you on the ride back.
Like, we don't remember games 18 through 30 at Team Yankee either. All right. We're about to go into the bonkers time. So
it's bonus content time, Thomas.
a Patreon episode. No. There we go. We promised we would never do that, and we're not going to do that. But
we're not done with this topic.
Yeah, we are. Because the point is, there's not going to be a done with this topic. It's a thing. It's obviously very much a perspective thing. Yeah. It's the way that you view a rule set or a set of problems, for that matter. The different ways that people problem solve. But and you heard it vociferously here, particularly in a triumvirate of people, you know, it's a simple majority, and that's not necessarily fair. And I get that. So, you know, we would love to hear what you think about this. You were also very kind to already begin to chime in on some of the stuff. Doug Glover, I'm sure we will hear from you shortly. But let us know what you think. I think it's definitely kind of a spectrum. You know, there's simple things, there's the bigger things, but when do you pull the trigger? When do you change something? Do you ever change something? Do you do it after the first reading and you say, you know what, that's bogus, let's do it this way or whatever? We would love to hear what you do. So drop us a line, anythingbutaonepodcast@gmail.com. I know it's horrible. I may get a new email address. Or most importantly, hop on the Facebook group and give us some comments there. I'll pour cold water on Ray and Richard and try and separate them in a few minutes. Other than that, Chantel, please, dear God, save us.
This has been Anything But a One. Adventures in Historical Miniature Wargaming. Subscribe on all major podcatchers and please rate and review us. You can support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/ABA1. patreon.com/ABA1. See you next time.